Gabby, bridging psychology and spirituality 101. So this is a follow-on from a podcast I did over the last few days looking at stress, but I'm not going to just look at stress. I think looking at stress and well-being is equally important. But as I said on previous podcasts, the reason that I wanted to explore this topic is because at this time of the year, is when stress levels for people can go up. Although we have had an exponential time in history, over the last few years in terms of what's happening to people in their lives, and the kind of things that would stress you out. So whatever part of the world that you're in, you've experienced to some degree some kind of worry, concern, stress, and real anxiety. But at this time of the year, I'm in the UK. I live near London. We've just had a lot of snow. It's really cold, probably not cold in comparison to some of the temperatures that you can get out there in other parts of the world. But it's cold for me, and it makes it really difficult to get out and about. And I love the summer holidays. We had some really good sunshine this year, long days, hot days. Sometimes too hot. So, I don't really want to complain about how hot it was, because we miss it when it's not there. And we've got much less sort of sunshine in the days now, as well as this whole focus at the beginning of October, sometimes it seems like, where it all starts, and we start to move in towards thinking about the holidays. So that can be the children are going to be on holiday, parents are still going to continue working, or you have some time off work. So it could be a number of things, but I know that this time of the year for a lot of people can be really stressful. So I wanted to have a look at the topic again, but also some aspects of well-being. And in the next couple of podcasts that I do after this, I'm going to go more into the well-being side and actually introduce some of the positive psychology, and some of the links that might help people if you want to go a little dive a little bit deeper. If you're like me, you hear something and you want to go a bit deeper on a subject. So over the last couple of podcasts, I'm a Taurus and I like to do things in particular order, but I think it's useful for people if they've not heard the previous two talks that I did, was just to consider what we covered in that, so that if there's something in there that's useful, you can go back and listen to it. There's no real time points, but basically what I was looking at was what is stress, what it's like for people. How it shows up, the kind of things that you can experience, how it affects your health, your mental health, your general well-being, and the difference between how you need to respond when you're in a crisis in comparison to some day-to-day stresses, and what happens when it's just day-to-day reactions and it turns into something much longer term. So we were sort of reviewing what a lot of the current ideas are about stress. But certainly, as I've worked in the fields of mental health and well-being for over 25 years and originally trained as a psychotherapist, I came into contact with a lot of people who were either stressed or just not happy, miserable, and just viewing life from a really difficult place. And sometimes that was linked with external factors, but sometimes it was linked with the internal factors that we have, whether it's our psychology, how we view the world, how we experience life. So the language around mental health and well-being has certainly changed over the last 6 years. And in the last decade, we've certainly seen more focus on well-being and more focus on positive psychology. So for anybody who doesn't really understand kind of what the differences are, before I go in a bit more looking at stress in particular, and the reason I focus on stress is stress literally underlies any other mental health condition that we may feel we're developing or we have been diagnosed with. And as I said on previous podcasts, I'm not here to really help you work out whether you need a diagnosis or not. There are more sophisticated measures to do that, and you really need to see a clinician in the area that you live. But helping people understand their own mental health and well-being and some of the things that we know from research can help quite a lot of people, you know, it's not specific. And then you adapt it to your own specific needs. So I'm always suggesting that what you can do to know yourself and understand yourself really is so important. Then you can start to feel more empowered and take some responsibility for what you can change and work on how you manage what feels difficult and what you can't change at the moment. So just to sort of give you a bit of an overview, you know, mental health, the approach to understanding people and why they have difficulties, we've used different language over the years, but, you know, for over 100 years since, and we've all heard of Freud and Carl Jung has been around, we've been trying to understand what those difficulties are. And the way that we label those difficulties and the symptoms that people experience started actually with someone called Craiklin. And he went around the different psychiatric hospitals at the time, or they used to be called lunatic asylums, and tried to understand the distress that people experience. Some of the language that they used back then has changed, and that's the thing with language, it changes over time. We've got more access to research now, and in particular the brain neurology that people like Andrew Huberman and Jordan Peterson will utilise in their day-to-day psychological practices. They're looking at how the brain works and what's stimulated. And I'm going to give a very poor summary, really, of the quite deep and extensive work that they do. But I really like, if you're interested in all things psychological, Andrew Huberman's certainly, I think, someone that most people can listen to. And it certainly helped me in my work. When I trained as a therapist, it was a second career, and I started that when my children were little. And, I was going through quite a lot of stress at the time when I was studying. And I sort of finished that training and didn't really feel like I had a good handle of mental health and well-being. And I think, like a lot of people, you know, had some fear around it, and what might I do if somebody comes in and declares that they feel a range of things. And so it's what led me really to go on and continue training, either in more approaches to help people find some resolution or just feel better. I used to use a really simple scale, actually. If you're not feeling okay, what's that like? And when you are feeling okay, what's that like? And sadly, there was a lot of people I come into contact with that really struggled to think about times when they did feel okay. So mental health actually sits on a continuum. And if you're not feeling okay most of the time, you know, it may well be that you've already been to see people. So try and figure out what could help or help you feel differently. So when I started the training, I came into contact with a lot of adults who either were using coping mechanisms, whether it's drugs or alcohol, and were miserable, upset, or just struggle with day-to-day life. And as time went on over the years, as I started managing services for children, adults, and we did a lot of training for professionals where we looked at mental health and well-being, it still sat in what we call a deficit, an illness model. So it was always about having a look at what was wrong with people. And even back then, before I come into contact with a lot of the information that I have over the last decade, it never quite sat right with me, because I thought, it's all very well sitting in a room and people coming to see you, and as much as your intentions are good and you want them to feel heard, validated, accepted, share their stories, their pains, hurts, past difficulties, I always felt that people should leave the office with a couple of things that they could take away with them and try, or a sense of hope, or a sense of being able to go and research something or find out a little bit more. And also, you know, people were only seeing me for once a week, and you have a very big ego if you think that you're the only person that can make a difference in your clients' lives. So I came across an organisation in the UK called the Human Givens, and they were starting to create a training which looked at, was basically like pseudoscience and pseudo-counselling and therapy, as well as what works, and helping us to look at what happens when somebody tells you the story, and what kind of things universally can you help them to learn so that they can leave the session and start to utilize some of those tools, take ownership and start to navigate their life. At the time when a lot of us were learning that, it was probably quite difficult to deploy because, you know, a lot of people have been taught that we should go to the doctors and that medicines are the answer, and there's certain ways of doing things. And but as you know, as time went on and I started to practice a range of these different approaches with people, and they never took over from the key purpose, which was really providing a safe space for people to come and share their concerns with you, because that's quite an honor. And anyone that I came into contact with that was able to do that, and we all do that in layers, you know, you do that to the level of how safe you feel with the person, whether you feel that you can trust them and you can open up, because for some people that's quite a huge step, and it certainly was for me at the beginning of my training. And back when we were training as therapists, we also had to have therapy ourselves. And often you'd be thinking, well, why do you have to go and see a therapist? Haven't got any problems. And well, that's when you become aware of what unconscious incompetence actually means. You know, you think you're okay, and then you realize that you come into contact with your own early programs, past messages about who you are and what shapes your ideas about the world. So, but I continued that journey because I started to understand myself and how I was influenced to be in the way that I was, and how I approached the world, and some of the difficulties that I had in my own family when I was growing up, and how they'd, some of them had marred me and some of them had created strengths for me, so that I could approach some of the things in the way that I did. You know, there's always something to bring from your childhood, as well as the difficulties and challenges that we face that we need to heal. And how we heal that? Well, there's a range of voices out there. So this is my first flag of, you're listening to me and I'm going to share a lot of ideas with you, and it's up to you to feel into what feels right for you and to discern whether or not the information right now is useful. Take what works and leave what doesn't, and equally do your own research and put out to the universe if you're that way inclined, and just say, right, this is where I am right now, and this is what I'd like help with, and this is what I need to know. So sometimes that's stumbling on a podcast. I do that on a regular occasion, or I stumble across a book in a bookstore. And I actually found a book, which I'm going to talk about in one of my next podcasts, about the musician Craig David, because my son and I are both really into music. And I actually knew someone that worked with him, and quite surprised in the first chapter to read about his experiences with back issues that he had. And that really resonated with me. And that's another conversation. And I'm trying to be conscious of not going off track here, as I tend to do sometimes. But how our physical issues can be caused by our emotional or psychological, you know, what we can ignore in and what we suppress, or how, if we suppress the need to, you know, have rest or have time out, and we're working too hard, how our bodies, if we ignore them, can eventually give up. And I've certainly had that happen on a few occasions. Hence why I go back to the notion of the everyday word that we're probably all familiar with, which is stress. So forward wind, I did some courses with the Human Givens and understood, yes, it's good that people can come and share their stories, but you don't want to get locked in your stories and you don't want to get stuck. What you want to be able to do is work out, where are you at? What do you want? And what's going on in your life right now? Sounds quite simple for me. I think my journey was probably a bit longer than necessary, really. But we are where we are, you know, and part of that is accepting exactly who you are right now. So even though I also use coaching methodology as well in the work that I do, because I also work with teams. So I use the coaching in the teams that I work with. It's not always about focusing on change and transformation. It's the balance between, if you've been really stuck, do you need to do something different and change? As in NLP language, neuro-linguistic programming, they say, you know, if you keep doing what you're doing, you'll keep getting what you've got. So if you don't like what you've got, you might need to change some of your practices, and that can be shaking up your routine or creating a routine or whatever. And that's taken us into this sort of, okay, so what can we do about it? If you're always doing, then the balance is maybe listen to your body. And if you feel like you're flaking out and you can't keep your eyes open, that is the key sign to, you know, to get some rest. Now, certainly when my children were small, when I was running from, you know, school to school and work and back to school and dealing with kids who rip their trousers at 2 o'clock in the afternoon while you're in a meeting and all the other stresses that happen, as well as going shopping and getting the food and all that, you know, there was barely any time to sit down and breathe, let alone, you know, have an hour out. But I was able to put time points in. I think my mum had done me a favor when I was growing up by saying, you know, you've got to get, it's almost like you've got to make use of the space sometimes when you can get it, because you don't know when you're going to get it again. So we're looking at stress. So for those that have just tuned in, this is part three, and I'm just going to do a bit of an overview of what's in part one and two, because if you're new to it as a concept, or maybe you've just not heard my take on it sort of fits in with what the science says, but I try and break it down so that, you know, we can all understand the basics of it, because stress is often outside of our conscious awareness. You can start to feel agitated, irritated, distracted, lacking focus, and thinking that it's something else, when actually it can be something that's, it's almost like something sitting at the back of your mind, and it doesn't ever completely go away, but it can be something that's gnawing at you. And that can be yesterday's conversation with a work colleague that just, you know, we've all had those work colleagues, haven't we? You know, that we spend some time with and we leave and we just have that little feeling in our gut that just doesn't sit right. Equally, we've had some colleagues that when we're with them, we feel great, we feel buzzed, energized, focused, and it's been a great experience. And thankfully in my career I've had more of the, you know, the second aspect, but I have worked with people. And I think in your family as well as in your work, you know, you're in work 8 hours, 10 hours, 12 hours a day, depending on what you do. Who you work with matters. The kind of things, the way that you interact with people matters, and the way that you are and the way you get support and what helps you when you're flagging matters. Because the key components of stress are all interrelated. The kind of sleep you get, the quality of sleep, the quality of your relationships, if you've got relationships, whether you engage, are you introvert, are you extrovert, you know, what's your astrological sign, and are the planets shifting at the moment? And we, for anyone who's got a spiritual vibe going on as well, around the 21st of December, we've got the solstice, and we've got all sorts of different shifts happening in the economy and society and all the stuff that's on the news. And I don't know about you, but I switched off the news almost permanently from the beginning of 2019. I've never been a big one for watching the news, and I still seem to manage to know what's going on. Anyway, I digress. So in the previous two podcasts, we looked at stress. And so we looked at what is it? So, you know, what is it? What do you feel? What's going on for the brain when we start to feel stress? That's when we're aware of it. And we're normally aware of it is when something sort of big happens, or when we're in a crisis, or some information comes in our direction and we feel shocked. That's usually the sort of most obvious way. But we can have very subtle stressors that sort of like toxic drips, really, that will drip, drip, drip in your day-to-day life. And it's sometimes only when you transplant yourself into a different location with a different group of people, or you go on vacation. And I think more than 2 weeks is often what's needed in order to sort of, because you're releasing the resistance out your body and any stress that you've got there, and your brain can start to just unwind from the focus that's been captivated in that whole time period of whatever it is that you do, however you fill your time. So we looked at kind of what happens when it shows up, what's the brain's job. So it's kind of cool that you are going to get stressed at times, because you need it for, like, if you're going for a job interview, or you're doing a presentation at work, or you're standing up speaking in front of people. And one day I'll share my stories about how I don't know how I ever really got up and stood in front of people at the time that I did. And I think it's one of those experiences that, because I lived through that, it's made a lot of the other things that I've tried to face, because we all have our, you know, things that we find a bit challenging, somewhat easier. So sometimes you just have to roll with the, what's that phrase, roll with the punches. So how does it show up for you? What do you experience? So what I ask people to do always is, you know, if you're driving and you're doing something else at the moment, you know, because you can, please don't drive and listen to the podcast and then, you know, we want safety as the main factor. But if you're not experiencing it right now, it doesn't mean to say you have to start thinking about it. But if you start to experience it, or you make some time to think about when it shows up, how do you experience it? What happens to you? What do you feel in your body? Do you feel tension, tightness? Does your chest get tight? Do you feel palpitations? I don't really get the palpitations. I normally just I totally lose concentration, find it really hard to focus on documents. And it's usually that's the thing that causes some of my stress, because I've got a level of dyslexia and I write reports and it's my least favorite activity. But when I've painstakingly done that, as I did one recently, it took me weeks, but we did it as a team, and thankfully on Teams now, if anyone's got one of those functions at work, you can all do it together live, and that has been a blessing to my life. I know that. So modern technology has eased some of the difficulties we face, and it's increased some of the challenges as well. And that takes us to our level of perception, you know, so how we perceive what we're experiencing, what's going on, will actually make a difference to how we experience stress. Because some factors, you know, you're in a crisis, you've got to get out of the way, you've got to go into fight and flight. The whole process is designed to get you moving and get you into safety. Some people, though, when they're really stressed, and if you think about different times in life, I certainly have had fight, I've had flight, and I've also had, I think it's fawn, where, you know, you just like lay there, you don't know what to do. So we can experience different responses. Or we can experience the more subtle ones. We can be irritated, moody, not know why, agitated. So I don't want to labour that point too much, because I did spend a bit of time on the other podcast, the first one, looking at that in more detail. But what I did suggest to people is having a journal is a beautiful way of not only capturing some of the what can seem like insignificant moments in your day, that you can capture and build upon and review on. And when you're going through times of stress, depression, anxiety, or anything like that, you can go back to that journal and not just look at some of the things I'm asking people to write, but the things where you've done well, where you've had a good day, where you reflect on and you think, what are my strengths? Why did that go well? Because that's also about building up your confidence and feelings of competence and self-esteem. Because that really, and for most people, is an internal job. You don't really want to aim to get that too much from the outside, because if you're not getting it from the outside when it's not there, then that can exacerbate any of those feelings that you've not come to terms with. And so stress is an external and an internal job. You can have nothing going on the outside. On the surface, it looks like everything's fine. But on the inside, internally, you've got negative thoughts rolling around in your head, circular thinking. You're waking up feeling flat or moody. What I suggested in the previous podcast is in your journal, you can have a list of what are the kind of things that stressed you out. So we're talking about the holidays. It may be that you're looking forward to staying with some family. It may be that you're not. It may be running around getting presents. I love the Christmas lights in the shopping, but I don't like too much of it, too much noise. I just feel like, you know, sometimes it literally jingle jangles your system. So, I've learned to temper that. I've learned to kind of put a time frame on how much I can expose myself to a certain level of stimulus, because that's what that is. So you write in your journal what stresses you out, and then you create a plan on the left-hand side, all the different things that you can think of. And the process of downloading that onto paper with a pen or typing it, but they say that through the process of writing it in the pen, you can get much stronger results. It frees up the sort of prefrontal cortex, the front of the mind, and allows the unconscious, almost like solutions, to start coming. So if anyone listens to Abraham Hicks, any positive psychology, Joe Vitale, then you'll know that a lot of people say you can't solve the problem with the same mind that the problem was created. So you have to focus on shifting your state. So you write down what the things are that stress you out. And then you write on the side of that what strategies you can deploy. Because one of the key things we know in research around depression and low mood, and I say low mood because everyone will get a low mood at some stage, but not everybody will turn into having clinical chronic depression, is you start to think about any solutions, and you might even run those by some trusted friends. So if going to stay with family, it may be thinking about, you know, what's the solution to that? Is it you stay away from Uncle Buck and, you know, spend more time lingering around other family members? Is it that you don't go for 3 days, you know, you go for 1 day? So you start thinking about what are the things that are stressing you out now, and then going into solution brain. If that's too much of a transit, what you need to do in between, and you can do that while you're writing, is start to take some deep breaths. And I talked about that in the other two podcasts, and I'm probably going to mention it in every podcast because I'm also a yoga and meditation teacher. And learning to breathe has been fundamental to me, not just getting through stressful periods, but actually starting to increase the vitality that I had. Because if you're not breathing properly, you're actually cutting off your life source. So even just noticing how you breathe. So there's lots of stuff on YouTube about just whether it's 7-11 breathing, 5-5. It doesn't matter what the number is, just breathe in, counts, breathe out, and notice how long you can do that for. It takes about 3 or 4 breaths to come out of the stress modulating system. So you want to just sit there and focus. What I ask people to do is to, you know, sit in your office chair, your sofa, in your car while it's parked, and just focus on your breathing. Try, if you're not used to doing it, set yourself a goal of just 5 minutes, an hour, and focusing on that, because you'll be surprised at how much more productive you can feel when you start deploying some what look like very simple practices. Now, I've practiced meditation for much longer periods of time, and other times I can't practice it at all. And sometimes I sit down and I'm having what feels like downloads of so many ideas that I've got to get my notepad out. And it's often solutions to a project maybe I'm working on. So get your journal out, a nice journal, one that's nice to write in, a nice pen, and start to write that. So that's on one page, but we never focus only on what the problem is, because we'll stay in the old model, the illness, the deficit model. What we need to then shift is into the wellness model, or the positive psychology model. So, but like I said, that can be a bit of a leap. So you start with the breathing. And if anyone's done NLP or you want to research it, you look at something called state management. And I think athletes have used it. Whether they call it that still now, I'm not sure. But it's about it's working towards getting in a state of flow. Because when you're in a state of flow, everything gets in alignment and everything starts to feel much easier. So you want to get into a more calmer state. So you have to practice something. Then you can relook at your list and start writing any ideas. Even if you just find one or two, feel good that you've done that. If you notice that your thoughts are saying, that's not good, I can't do it, then you're starting to become aware of belief systems or old thoughts that are raging around in your mind, which could be what is responsible for you feeling stressed a lot of the time. Because there's Joe Vitale and Abraham Hicks and Greg Braden and there's many out there now, and Bruce Lipton, I love his work. Talk about your thoughts really do impact your feelings, your behaviors, and your future. So if you want to change your future, sometimes it is simply as changing your thoughts. And if there's a part of you that says, really, at the moment, then you know that you've got to do some work, because I've got several stories of how I've managed to change the future or even create a future I didn't even realize was possible. So that's where you start to write in your journal. So we're focusing on holiday stress, and I probably will revisit this because it's something that's come up time and time again, whether I was working with teenagers in schools who were going through the first of everything, the first love, the first argument, the first fallout, party, you know, information that's splayed all over Facebook after they've had a party at the weekend, or parents who are really struggling to manage working and kids or can't relate to it. You know, stress permeates you know, every aspect of society, and that has been massively impacted by this constant focus on lack and the global economy. And what the news tends to do is only focus on those things that feed the fear and the worry. And so fear is also a part of this. And sometimes that's related to childhood patterns that come up, and is an opportunity for us to face it square in the face if it comes up and say, right, okay, is this now true? Is there any facts in what I'm now thinking? So we have to become scientists in our experience and start looking at our experience and monitoring and reviewing and looking at it a little bit more objectively. When we're subjective and we get caught in the emotions, we can get very caught in the same cycles that got us there in the first place. So I will, as we move along tonight, have a look at some of the things that you can deploy. And like I said, on Google, there's lots of sites. If you put in, you know, how to manage stress, top tips of stress, 12 steps for reducing stress, 10 steps for increasing well-being. So, and you just, it really doesn't matter what you try. Over the 20 years since I probably, well, it's 30 years now, I think, started on this journey. Some of that was about using aromatherapy oils because smell is very powerful. So I know that lavender is meant to be really good for making people feel relaxed, but you don't want to use that. If you want to focus and study, you know, you want to use rosemary. And so some people are really responsive to smells, and they can exacerbate either way for you know, positive or not. And there can be other things. I know where I live, and a lot of the mind, body and spirit events are starting to use sound, and sound's coming out in research as really being responsible for changing some of the brain waves and sort of influencing us at a real cellular level. But for some people, they might not necessarily notice the impact that or something's having on them, because you have to become aware of your energy in a really subtle way. But the research is coming out that some of these things can really help us. So going back to holidays, we're now on the 18th of December. Now, I've tried to keep it simple this year for various reasons. And I did say that not only, you know, are people now massively impacted by the hikes we've had in the UK for energy bills, it's getting much dearer to get around, food has gone up, and people are having to really think about how they stretch the same money that they were getting even further. So, you know, I think honest conversations, if you're feeling pressure to buy presents, let alone the perfect present, I'm not sure there is one, but if you're feeling pressured to do that and you can't afford it, and you're going to put yourself at risk of getting into debt for that, that is certainly one of the top ways to create or exacerbate any stress, because it's nothing like worry, money worries to exacerbate that. And if you've got those at the moment, do seek wherever you are help. Even talking about it sometimes and creating a budget will give you that sense of control. Because again, that's related to research on depression, that one of the factors with depression is if we feel like we have no control over anything. And it can be as simple as deciding what t-shirt or jumper to wear, what boots or shoes to wear, to the big stuff, you know, like taking out remortgaging or getting a loan or consolidating debts or creating a budget, all those factors. Financial management's not my area of speciality, but I know that the research is showing that finances and debt has a huge impact on people. So it's the time of the year when sometimes people really splurge out. And it's lovely. I mean, I like to give and I like to see the smiles on my son's faces at the things I give them. But at the same time, you know, we have said this year, let's not put everybody under pressure. I said, I'm doing it simple. For me, I'm happy that we're all together and are going to eat some nice food. And I'm very, you know, satisfied with that. But, you know, I like the simple things. So hopefully they will equally do the things that make them feel okay. Because if you do things that you don't really want to do, you can build up resentment and frustration. And that will just feed into any underlying feelings that have been lingering. Because there's something that Abraham Hicks talks about a lot, is that if you're in that negative cycle of thinking and it's really quite enmeshed, it doesn't take long for all the other negative thoughts to come in. So there's a real practice of waking up and purposely focusing on different kinds of thinking. And it does take consistent practice before the negative thoughts lose their grip, and literally like Velcro. You know, sometimes they get stuck and it's very hard to shift them. So the first thing is thinking about, what's your plan for the holidays? Who you're staying with? Are you at home? Are you on your own? Do you want to make some contact? So there are lots of meetup groups out there, and there are organizations that now are, hopefully people have carried over from the pandemic, where people are making a much bigger effort to get together. And there's certainly a lot more going online. You could be the one to instigate something, you know, put the call out there and do a lunchtime call. If you're with family or friends, you know, of course, we've got weather conditions and they change from moment to moment. So what's your plan B if plan A looks like it might not work in that way? Who are you spending time with? Who are the people that are going to trigger you? So have a plan. So one of the great things that processes I used to teach teenagers and parents was visualization. So you can almost like plan your future, plan your present, but it's in your future as though it hasn't happened yet, if that makes sense. So you can visualize the places that you go into, but rather than thinking, oh, when I see Uncle, you know, Bob or Auntie Sue, it's like this, and you get into that negative cycle of thinking. I mean, I might have lots of positive thinking people on here, but I want to address the possibility that there may be one person you come into contact with, your mother-in-law, for example, although I don't want to do any mother-in-law bashing. Mine was great in some ways, in other ways, it was a challenge. So you've got to be aware of what are your soft spots. We've all got them. Some of us are just good at regulating our emotions when they are pressed. I don't want to use the word trigger. I think that's been used a lot lately, because trigger usually means a very strong reaction. And very strong reactions can be linked to childhood experiences. So someone could do something now that is similar to what happened to you years ago. And if that's the case, again, use your journal and reflect on that, because it's not bad. But what can happen when we're triggered is we go back into the stress system, we come out of our thinking brain, our logical side, into this emotional side, and get caught in the responses of that. And that will take us either into shame, rage, anger, frustration. Any of those feelings, often underlying depression can be anger. You know, we've suppressed how we feel because we didn't feel safe when we were growing up. So see, if you start seeing this information that your body's given you as an opportunity, you can actually start to fly through this stuff faster. So see yourself as a scientist this Christmas, you know, and that you're, if it's not Christmas, it's a different kind of holiday and you're meeting up with family. Whatever it is, if it's something outside you don't do very much, then you know that there's potential for all sorts of things to happen. So have a look at previous times and the people you come into contact with and what you know about them. So it's not seeing them for exactly the same person, because they may well have changed. The person who drank a lot last year might not be drinking anymore. So keep your ideas open, but use that information as a, okay, if this happened, I'm not comfortable with it. How can I respond? And if you're not sure, again, lean on some friends who have some solid advice that they can share with you. Be aware of your soft spots. Then the best time I find, but excuse me, you don't necessarily have to do it, is just as you're going to sleep at night. and you start to get really relaxed, our brain starts hitting towards that sort of alpha space where we get really relaxed, but we can still think about things. So that's not the time to think about anything that went wrong that day. It's the time to think about what you did well that day. But you can also use the time. You can start to do some what I call flow breathing. And you lay on your back and you just breathe in and out. And you just imagine that the breath is coming up through your feet, right through your body, up through your lungs, into your throat. And when you breathe out, you're releasing stress and tension. When you breathe in, you breathe in calm and relaxation. Just do that. That's it. Breathe in and out. And every time your mind gets a little bit distracted, just say, hey, thank you, mind, you know, for giving me some more stuff to think about, but I'm going to focus on my breathing right now. I'll attend to you later. So you're not being negative towards yourself. You're just realizing that this is the way your body's just got in the habit of operating. Then lay there and think about the things that could be coming up, either the shopping you're going to do. So rather than imagining that everyone's going to bump into you and, you know, imagine, see people with smiles on their face, see the pathway opening up, see the shops having the things that you want, see yourself doing that really effortlessly as you glide through the shopping mall or the precincts. Imagine that you're going to knock on the door of the place that you're going to spend time at, and the person opens the door with a smile on the face and everybody else there is calm and chilled and smiling. Now, whether that works out like that or not doesn't matter so much. The point is you're starting to take control and harness the amazing faculty that you've got at your disposal, which is your brain. One of the reasons we have problems is because we're not utilizing our brain as effectively as we could. It's not about how much power it's got or whether there's dormant, you know, information we're able to access. We're just who we are right at this moment, but we can harness that power in a different way. So rather than using your energy to focus on anything negative, use your energy to focus on the kind of scenarios. So if you were writing a stage play or a story, then, you know, who are the characters in this story? One of the things that I was taught years ago, and I don't use it very often, but there was a time period where I used it with a lot of teenagers. And I think it's because they always have someone that annoyed them on a day-to-day basis. And and sometimes that was a teacher, or often actually it was a teacher. And I would get them to think of the character Mickey Mouse or any other character, cartoon character that made them laugh. So even if you were doing that now and you thought, okay, I imagine this person that irritates me and I don't know why, and maybe this is something for me to learn, whatever that is, but you've not always got the flexibility to just go out and meditate, you know, in the summer house or the shed for the evening. You're needing to interact with people, and sometimes pressure's on because you know, perform a certain role while you're there. So what you can do as leading up to any of those events is just imagine that, you know, that person is one of your supermen or your cartoon character, and play around with that and see what happens when you do that. And if that elicits positive feelings in you, you're already starting to create a shift. You're already starting to do like state change management. So these are little tips, but actually incredibly powerful. And the visualization, like I said earlier, athletes use it all the time because they've got to visualize winning, how they run. But they even knew in some research that when people were injured, they had a group of athletes, and one half of the athletes were visualizing the recovery and the other half weren't. And the ones that were visualizing their bodies healing and the bones and tendons and everything getting stronger actually healed quicker and performed well when they went back on the track. And they've seen this in other aspects of in sport. So it's a very, very powerful tool. And the reason I say put it in your journal, if you start getting in the habit of having a journal, I don't mean putting your deepest thoughts in there, because if you're carrying it around in your bag, you might just want it as a sort of notebook, or if you're keeping it at home, you might want to write some of your dreams in there or anything that's occurred to you, deep insights. But of course, it needs to remain private because that's your private thoughts and feelings. But
if you start to write some of the tools in there, you can have a page that says, right, a tool, and when you tried it and what happened. Is when you've tried it a few times, and it normally takes about 3 or 4 times of trying something to get out of the sort of brain of the attempting to try it. It's a bit like riding a bike, you know, you're so focused on not falling off that you're forgetting to pull the brakes or pedal the wheel. At some point, you get consciously competent at doing that and you're just riding the bike. So now you can focus on the trees and what's happening in the countryside or wherever you are on the bike, rather than turning the wheel and pulling the brakes. And that's how clunky sometimes learning these processes can feel. But I saw a lot of really good results with this. This is why I'm really passionate about some of the things that I share. So holidays. So we've looked at what is stress, what could be stressful, how you experience it. You're writing that down in your journal, and then any ideas that come to you. So what you now, the message you're now giving to your mind is, okay, so mind, right? And we're gonna use you in a different way. So you're starting to have this dialogue with yourself that's more positive. And for some people, that can be a challenge because they're so used to having a negative dialogue. And if you can start to master that, you will really start to see significant changes. Possibly a couple at Christmas, there are no guarantees. But the point is you feeling like you've got some tools in your belt. So when you go to any of these events, whether it's a work event or anything, you know, stay away from people you think might influence you to do things that you don't want to do. Or do you want to drink? Do you want to eat so much? Do you want to ruin the good steps that you've made? Or how are you going to, you know, you're going to balance discipline with freedom and bohemian aspects of our natures? So those are the things to sort of think about of what you might come up against, and as well as managing your work deadlines and family commitments and everybody else's needs, because everyone else will be, especially children, they can get really excited, but they can also get really tired and grumpy. So if you've got a family, you're not only having to manage yourself, you're having to manage all the newness of the children starting to manage their emotions, because that's what's happening to your children. They're starting to experience their own emotional landscape and don't always understand it, so have the occasional meltdown. And we have to, as adults, regulate our own emotions so that we can teach them how to do that. And that's usually, you know, the point of why we're adults and parents. So that's kind of starting to preempt what might happen and starting to build up some tools of visualization, of knowing what your soft spots are. And then on the next page, and you've got to do this, is what you're looking forward to. What, and even whether that happens or not, because you might be thinking, I'm really looking forward to Auntie Flo's, you know, cheesecake. And Auntie Flo doesn't make it this year, you know. See, but at the same time, just think about what you're looking forward to. Think about the smell of the smells that you like. Is where you're visiting near a forest, you know, pines, can you smell them? Do you look forward to all the lights? I love the Christmas lights. So I find that quite magical. So is it the lights? Is it the carol singing? Is it going to the church or the synagogue? Or, you know, what is it that you're looking forward to? Is there children that make you laugh and you can allow your own free child to run around with them playing as well? And so write a list of what you're looking forward to. If you've got a journey in the car, think about the music, if you like music, that you're going to have in your car playing on the way there. Because music has an excellent way of transporting you into a really nice zone. So that's kind of starting to harness or starting to think about who you are right now, what's going on for you right now. And some of the stresses that you're experiencing might have nothing to do with holidays, but it may just be that the holidays bring up so much stuff for people. I know that. I think in the UK, but it may be everywhere, that often, you know, we see people going to the divorce lawyers, like, goes up exponentially in January, and there can be, you know, arguments taking place and things going on that maybe we weren't expecting. So who are the people that you can call on You know, who's got your back when you need it? Or have you got a therapist or a coach or someone that you work with that if you just need to have a bit of time out? Some people having time out is to go and find some space. And even in busy environments, you can get to that peace and centering in yourself. One of the things that we teach in yoga meditation, that if you imagine the tarot card of the Wheel of Fortune, is everything can be chaotic around that wheel. But if you sit in the center of the wheel and start to breathe and observe what's going on and take on an observational sort of stance, you can start to get back into a calmer state. Again, it depends on how often you've been able to tap into that. What I find, say, like with meditation and mindfulness, it's not how long you do it so much. You don't really have to sit there for 2 hours or an hour, even 20 minutes. But it's, if it's 5 minutes a day, and then it's 5 minutes, you know, every couple of hours. Sometimes I do 5 minutes and it goes into half an hour, because when I start to experience that really beautiful state of stillness and peace, when most of the time can feel frantic and chaotic, well, not most of the time, but high proportion of time, especially when I'm working on projects, there's something just really quite beautiful about that. And it's a state that I tap into when I'm doing my photography. And I took up photography about 5 years ago, and I was really pleased because I'm quite academic and I did a lot of research and I was working and bringing up the kids. So I didn't really have a hobby. So when I found photography, it was the one thing that sort of took me out of my analytical mind and brought me to this space of where everything slows down. And if you've ever had that experience of doing something, whether that's Tai Chi or Taekwondo or, you know, anything that really means that you're having to really focus on the moves. Sorry, that's my little dog in the background that I've borrowed, actually. That I miss that, didn't I, Luna? That because I can't have a pet full time, I've actually got a friend who's got a dog and she brings her dog round to me fairly frequently. And she's quite fun to play with and nice to have around. So that's one of the ways that I add, you know, to the positive experiences. So it's thinking about what are the positive experiences that you have. Now, I was listening to a talk today about positive psychology, and what they were saying is, you know, if you think about your days of the week, you know, it's 24 hours in a day. Say we sleep for eight, we go to work for eight, and maybe we're up for eight. How are we using that time? How much of that time is doing things that we enjoy? How much of that time is doing things that we think we must? And how much of that time do we think, sit back, reflect on what's working and reviewing aspects that we could do more of? And I think initially when I took up photography, it was really because my son, he had a tablet, a Samsung tablet. And I noticed how nice the pictures were because it was a bigger screen. And then I noticed how absorbed I got in that. And then when I started to notice these experiences more and more that I had every time I took it with me, about 2 years later, I bought a proper camera. And then I put it officially in my calendar every week that I was going to have a proportion of time. And back then, because I was working 4 days a week, I could take, you know, 3 hours out every week and go and practice using my camera. And then I started to get the editing equipment, Photoshop and Lightroom. Really struggled to, because I'm not really technically minded, so I really struggled to use that at first. But when I got a hang of it, I really enjoyed the editing process. So then it was a case of noticing how I felt when I was doing that activity. So I started to increase the amount of time that I was doing that activity. So sometimes we just need to start with one small step. So if you're doing, if think about your week 24/7, what's included in that week, and you can break it down, draw it out, do a graph, and then think about how you use that time and how much time to get to yourself to rest. Are you getting quality sleep? Because quality sleep is key if you're not getting good sleep. If you can listen to music just as you're going to sleep, there's a whole range of not all of them, but a proportion of quality music on YouTube that actually helps the brain states and get into a more relaxed state and a deeper sleep. And again, it's getting to the habit of doing that. The other tip is, when you wake up in the morning, what kind of thoughts are going through your head? So do you find that you're thinking the same things over and over? If so, write your list. Write down what three tasks you want to do that day. And then what are the I'd like to's, sort of things on top of that list. So we've thought about some goals that you could have for the holidays, you know, and the goal could be to meet the new baby, to go to a new venue, to eat some new food. Put some new things into that, because one of the things we certainly know in psychology, that the novelty factor doesn't stay around for long, and we can get bored quite easily. So sometimes just doing something different on one of the days can make a big difference to, you know, how you feel. Then what you do in your journal is you write down every time you do something that feels good. What did you do? How long did you do it for? And what feeling did it evoke? Because we can forget. And if you've experienced a lot of depression and anxiety in your life, you will forget all of the moments, or a proportion of the moments, where actually you felt good. And what you've got to see, that it's almost like beads on a necklace. What you're doing is each moment becomes a bead, and you string the beads on the necklace, and you keep adding to that necklace, and it grows and grows and grows. And it's building on those positive experiences. So if you're short of them at the moment, because your whole week is focused on kids, work, all of those other things, put in sound bites, put in 5 minutes per hour to go off and breathe, reflect, look out the window, buy a plant, pour it on your desk. Put in little steps that can start to make a difference, so that when the holidays are over, what you've already started to do is prime your brain for more of that. And as we're heading towards 2023, and I'll do it on another podcast at some stage, you can actually start to deploy some proper coaching methods to look at longer term change and even transformation. So if you're somebody that feels fed up a lot and miserable a lot, then we certainly want to shift that. And it is possible. You know, I've had I had a depressive episode after my son was born. Well, I say episode, it actually went on for quite a long time. And when you're in that space, you don't know what else is possible, and you just feel miserable and you want to stay in bed. So I know a lot of the techniques that I'm sharing with people as I'm doing this podcast, some of them will be repeated, because I've just seen so many shifts people make, sometimes quite powerful ones, and sometimes enough to give that person a sense of, oh, okay, I did that. That felt quite good. So I'm going to do more than that. So have a think about schedule of activities and what you do in between. So it may be a bath, have time out, go out with friends, have time on your own. If you're an introvert and you like spending a lot of time on your own, you might have to think about, one, what could you really challenge yourself to look forward to, if that is a challenge? And then sometimes I know there's some things I do that my lads want to do, and I'm happy to do it with them because it's a small proportion of my time. But I don't use all my time in that way, if that makes sense. I just didn't want to get into this sense of duty of roles that people play, you know, because, and it's certainly true in new relationships and when you get married, you know, if you define the role too strongly, it really can be quite constricting and suffocating. It doesn't allow people's souls to grow and expand, and we hopefully are growing and expanding all the time, and sometimes that's why we do get pressed or anxious, because it's our system saying, right, hey, what next? You know, I've been doing the same thing for the last 5 years. I'm bored. I want a new challenge. I want to experience something else. If you are going to spend time with toxic families, some people do divorce their families or have time out. or are really particular about how much time they spend there, that's your call. And if you have experienced that stressful and toxic families, sometimes that's where it is really important to get some support from a good therapist. Now, I've trained as a therapist and I don't practice now, but I know there's a lot of therapists out there that aren't that great, and there's some really good ones. I think somebody that helps you get the space to think about what's going on and where you can build up your confidence to share whatever it is going on with you, your thoughts, your ideas, your imaginings, but also some tools to manage some of day-to-day situations, especially when there's toxic stuff around. And this, you know, we've become much more aware of that now. It's then your choice then, is do you turn up and manage that for a couple of hours, or do you say, actually, I'm giving it a miss now? Because I think it depends. I think Abraham Hicks talks about this as well in their talks about relationships, is it really depends on how detrimental it's going to be to you, or how, because sometimes it's quite empowering. You know, if you start to think that they all look like Mickey Mouse and you're not feeling triggered or, you know, your buttons haven't been pressed and you can manage that, that can feel really empowering when you go to that neutral state. But we're all in different places around that. And some people are, sometimes it's harder to do that. So put things in perspective. Is there a perfect gift? Are you the sort of person that trails around everywhere for the perfect gift and you're going to run yourself ragged? If so, be prepared for other people might not see it's a perfect gift, or is that the best, you know, way to operate sometimes? It may be that it is, and it may be that it works for you. And then set some goals, and maybe at the end of the day, just do a review, you know, in the nighttime. Write down three things that went well. What did you achieve that you didn't think you would? What went well? Who did you have a conversation with that it was a surprise, it was fun, it was nice? Do that at the end of the day. Do not, and this is the only time I say do not, use that time to procrastinate on anything that went wrong. If you said something or did something that you think, oh my goodness, how can I live that down? Or why did I say that? Or whatever. Write it in your journal, let it go, and forgive yourself and just become compassionate towards yourself. And if you need to apologize. If you need to pull someone to one side and say, look, you know, whatever that is, again, it's all, you know, it's different for different people, depending on the situation. I think it's very difficult, even if people are asking me now how they handle certain situations. For me, I think there's so much around family dynamics that you have to take into account. Sometimes you're at risk of giving the wrong information based on little snippets that you have of someone's life that they've lived for 30, 40 or 50 years. But what I try and do is help people understand what could be the benefits or the deficits, you know, challenges of pursuing certain ideas or lines of inquiry. And if we do something and afterwards, I think the common one I come noticed is, I used to see this with friends, you know, that they would get invited, say, every week to go to a certain event. And part of them would be, oh, I just really want to sit at home and watch TV and put my feet up. And they'd then go out and come back and think, I really wish I would have stayed at home, put my feet up, because it was boring, I didn't like it. Sometimes it only needs to happen two or three times where you say, right, I need to listen to my internal system that's telling me I don't really want to do that. I just want to put my feet up and watch TV. So you start what we're using the terminology now, self-care, and you start to think about what are the kind of things that support your well-being, what makes you feel better. If you're in a bit of a low place to start with, notice where it increases. Now, one of the routines I put in place, probably started it loosely about 8-9 years ago, But I had a car accident in 2019. It was sort of fairly serious because it literally knocked me physically, emotionally for a good few months. And because every day I needed to stretch because I was in a lot of pain, I was stiff, it took a while for my hip and shoulder and stuff to heal. And I'm not the, you know, I'm not the 20-year-old that I was when I did go to the gym, and I was incredibly fit, and it sort of knocked all that fitness back. And so I needed to get up every morning and do some stretching. And I trained in yin yang yoga, and yin yoga was sort of, I think that's a newer style of yoga, but basically it's more gentler on the body. Because the yang yoga, I couldn't manage getting up and down the moves or holding some of the poses because I didn't have the strength. I'd lost some balance. So I started doing the yoga. But I remember saying to friends, you know, that I'd wake up and often feel like, honestly, like a sack of potatoes, like really heavy. And I've never been someone who's highly energized anyway. And it might just be the way my psychology is, because, you know, I process deep stuff. I worked in the psychology field for a long time. Anyway, I'd get up and I'd feel this. So I'd do this routine. And then I learned something called quantum breathing. And it's really deep breathing, really powerful breathing. So I decided, right, I'm going to do that every day. And I'm still doing it. And it's 3 years on. So I do miss days. However, I did start to notice, and I can't remember the time period, but consistently I did it. And I would get up, and as long as I set myself a goal, as long as I did 3 to 5 stretches, it doesn't sound much, but it was a challenge at the time. And I would start to feel them loosening up a little bit. And it was I was going through a bit of an elastic band cycle where I'd pull the stretch and I'd get some flexibility and it'd spring back and I'd be back to square one the next day. And that certainly went on for months. So keeping buoyant and keeping my mood up and keeping hopeful about life was a bit of a challenge at the time. Anyway, I would do this breath work and then do these stretches and do a little bit of meditation, but I couldn't even sit up properly because I was getting back spasms and that. So it was really painful to lie down, painful to sit up. It just was difficult. So, but I started practicing some of the things I'm saying tonight about the guided visualization, and started changing the language of what I was using as well, which was, so stiff, I'm tired, I'm heavy. And I thought, I've got to, because language is really powerful. And I'll go into that in more detail in another podcast. But I had to change what I was saying, because it was like the messages I was giving to my body, basically. So anyway, I was doing the stretching and the breath work, and I started to notice after about 20 minutes that I would start to feel the heaviness go. Now, I wasn't feeling vibrant and buoyant and could just like spring out the front door, but I started to feel it shift. And there was something really powerful that I learned when I was doing the yoga teacher training, was after the accident, I didn't know the level of the depth of yoga that I then went on to learn that you do on teacher training. But the stretches, it was almost intuitive, really. And it's a bit like some stuff that if you've got, you know, experienced trauma in the past, whether it's PTSD, childhood trauma, or car accident trauma, you know, trauma stored in the body, and that's part of what the healing process needs to be about. I didn't understand it as fully at that time, even though I've worked in this field for a long time. Our understanding of trauma is fairly new, really, in comparison to the psychology field. And so it was about 9 months after, I look back and I possibly was either brave or stupid at the time, because I was still in a lot of pain and I couldn't, my right side was all stiff still. And I started getting sciatica, and I went on this yoga teacher training. And so I was learning about the yin yang yoga, but also the Chinese five elements, wind, fire, water, earth. And so when she went through the processes and talked about each element, I realized that the things I'd been doing were very earthy and metal, which is spiritual, which is linking with, you know, that expanded sense of self or your higher purpose, however you define your own spirituality. So metal comes under that, and earth is solid. It's like the trees, it's wood, it's hard, it's rigid. And when we got on to the next segment, which was learning about fire, some of the moves are similar, but what it does, it activates different set of meridians in the body. And it was really fascinating, because the next day after us doing the first, and it's like a whole day that you do yoga, you don't just do an hour. You learn about the theory and then you practice it. And I was still really struggling to get on the mat and off the mat. But I ran through this process, and it was yang fire and yin fire, and how it activates the body and what's going on a deeper layer. And the next day, even though everybody in the class, there was 18 of us, had gone through the same series, I walked into the kitchen the next day and everybody said, wow, you seem really different. And I felt it. I felt it in my voice, in my energy, in my mindset. I felt open, expansive, kind, warm, still in pain, but there'd been a massive shift. And I realized I'd got stuck. I'd got stuck doing the same thing over and over again. The strategy helps, but I was doing too much of the one thing. I'd got out of balance, and I needed to, in a way, if you're thinking about fire, you know, the fire is what activates the solar plexus, and it fires up your will and gets you moving forward and moves energy around the body. Whereas the earth, you know, it's a slower pace. The wood is more solid. And the water is flow. So the moves are more flowing. The earth one is you hold the moves. The wood one is you hold the moves for longer. And it's the same yoga poses. It's just different how you deploy it. So that was a really interesting lesson in one is how you can utilize the Chinese five elements in your own life. And then the different results you can get, because even though I was practicing yoga every day, and I've been doing it almost every day for the last 3 years, I set myself a goal still that I will just do 3 rounds of the sun salutation. And some mornings I go back to feeling like the bag of potatoes, because, you know, I'm running 2 projects and it's been stressful, and stress is held in my body. And I have to keep doing things to process that. So it's worth thinking about what things do you do that gets you moving? Because yes, I'm an advocate of yoga, but not everybody is. So, you know, whether that is playing football, you know, soccer, basketball, cricket, whether it's going on hikes, because you want someone that's going to rev your heart up a little bit from time to time, whether that's going swimming, deep water swimming, sea swimming, you know, whatever that is, what movement do you do? If you don't do anything at the moment, start to think about implementing that, because, and then monitor the experience of that. And what was interesting about the car accident was all of a sudden I had to focus for over 2 years on my physicality. And then how was my thinking and my breathing affecting my physicality? How was it affecting my energy levels? So in a way, I've had to kind of do a really deep dive into understanding how we operate at different times in our life and the different things we need at the different times and the phases we can go through. And we can get stuck in the same patterns of being, in the same activities, with the same people, doing the same thing, and the same family members, and the same rituals and routines. And sometimes it's because of fear, or we don't have confidence or the self-esteem to say, hey, I'm going to try that one class this week. I'm going to do something for me. I'm going to have that deep soak, and, you know, partner's going to look after the kids for an hour, and we're going to take it in turns to make sure that he gets what he likes and she gets what she likes for an hour a week or something. And things that you can start to put into your existence, because the research showed us when the pandemic hit, people who started to make those shifts internally at home, get online, do something that supported their well-being, you know, everyone was affected by it in some way, because you could not be affected by it, because of course we didn't know how long it was going to go on for and what was going to happen. So we were thrown into a level of uncertainty. And when you're going into a really big uncertain space, as possibly a lot of you who are listening are now, because there's a theme of that, how do you ride the wave of uncertainty and still stay grounded and in the center of the wheel? So before I end this talk podcast, for everyone who's listening, thank you very much for staying online. I really appreciate that. And I love to share the things that I've learned over the years, because one thing I know is it can be quite expensive going to see a therapist, and not everybody needs to go and see one. And there's so much information out there. How do you sort through the mire of that? How do you discern what's right and wrong for you? And how do you build up your own self-awareness and knowledge so you can discern what's right for you? And what kind of tried and tested techniques have I utilized over the years where I've seen some really good outcomes? And I think even if you just take one thing from this, often it's about three, actually, when people do a training course. You can be chatting for 3 hours, but people usually take about two or three things and you say, right, this struck a chord with me tonight. And this is what I'm going to think about and I'm going to try, because I deserve to really not only just scrape through Christmas and New Year or have a wonderful time over the Christmas and New Year, but I deserve to just have the good things in life. I deserve to feel good, feel great, feel ecstatic, feel vitality, feel happy. Now, emotions can be transient, so they're not necessary states that are always going to be with us. But I certainly know that when you put the time in to learning and discovering about yourself, you can start to experience more and more of the things and feelings that you do like, and much less of the things that drag you down and make you feel horrible, because no one deserves to be in that state. No one deserves to be suffering and miserable. And if you've read philosophy, we went for a phase at college where we also looked at philosophy, and that's enough to maybe sometimes develop. There's clearly good aspects to it, but that can also make you question life way too much, you know, your meaning and purpose. Now, if you are on the spiritual path and you've been thinking about your meaning and purpose, well, your purpose maybe is to find out exactly what lights you up, what makes you feel good. And in the meantime, consider where you put your energy, who you spend time with, and what bits you think, yeah, that's fine, I'll do that. I don't love it, it doesn't light me up, but it's cool. It's I'm doing that because it makes them happy, that smile on their face. And then what do you leave and park and move out of the way? And as you head towards the end of this year, review the year. What have you done well? What things did you achieve this year that you didn't think you would? Or did you start that you've enjoyed? What have you tested out and left behind? Because sometimes life's a series of experiences, and we can decide whether we perceive those as good or bad. But I'm certainly going to be back online, because I've picked up some really cool information over the last few days connected with positive psychology, but I always sort of intermix it between what makes us feel like okay and not okay, because I never know who's going to be listening on the call, and at the same time what I'm inspired to share. So some of the other things that are a little bit more esoteric, but I did say it's bridging psychology and spirituality. Two of my passions and areas that I've been involved with for a long time, but I was more of a closet spiritualist until about 5-10 years ago, because in my day job they certainly weren't conversations that you shared. And there's still some you don't. Sound healing is still unique to a lot of people, but what better for me to go and lie in a room with candles on and somebody plays some music and I can relax totally. I love that. So so sound healing, if somebody's around that plays crystal bowls, give that a go. Breathe into that, learn some breathing techniques. Think about aromatherapy, holistic approaches, infrared beds. I did actually try them when I was in a lot of pain and had hip swelling, and I did notice a reduction actually after the first one, so that was helpful. And I've tried a range of approaches over the years, but I think my biggest learning has really been about learning about myself. And that can be through things like the gene keys, human design, astrology, looking at, numbers, holistic practices. So the key for you is when you get into that really quiet, centered space, and if you've not been there many times or at all, you've got to set that up as a goal, because stillness, when you get into nothingness and stillness, there's a whole range of things that can happen that you just don't even realize is going to happen. It's quite an interesting space to get into. So practice creates some space to get still and focus on your breath and listen to some music. Tune in to the air conditioning. Tune in to the sunlight on your face. Tune into a candle that's blowing in the wind. Whatever the thing is, but something that takes your attention away from all the thoughts that run through your mind, and give yourself some respite as a starting point. And then make it your practice to start asking yourself, what does my body need right now? What do I need right now? What do I need to do? Often Sunday I like is a good day where I think, what's coming up in the week? What do I need to get done? What would I like to get done if I've got the time? Who can help me with some of these things, and who can I help? So think, plan your week, put a bit of a routine in place that can help if you're a little bit chaotic like I can be. Because with chaos comes anxiety, and then more chaos, and a desk where I lose lots of papers and takes me 10 times longer to write a report. So breathe in, just practice breathing in. And if you're listening right now, just notice, feel your heart. Can you feel your heart pumping? Can you feel the blood going around in your system? Can you feel the heat in your body, or do you feel cold? Are you starting to reminisce of some of the previous holidays where you've had, you had a drink and it was bliss, or you went to see some lights around the house, you cut down your own Christmas tree. Every Christmas movie I'm watching, someone's always going to cut down a Christmas tree. I've never done that, but I do I do like them. Where is your mind at? How much time do you spend fretting, worrying? And start to focus, just take your focus back to yourself and how you feel, and ask yourself, where am I on that scale of I feel okay and not okay? And then what could help me? And if you're spiritually inclined, whatever that means to you, call out to your higher power and say, right, okay, I'd like some guidance on this. I want to create a week now that I'm going to enjoy. And then ask yourself, what would that look like? So you could even pose it as a question, but not even spend too much time thinking on that. Just think of, start to consider, where are your stress points? Are you always stressed? Or are you just stressed a little bit? Are you in and out? I'm in and out of stress sometimes. Last year I was running two projects and didn't realize, even though on paper they look small, setting up and designing two projects at the same time was incredibly stressful. But one of them worked well because I had a great team. And for the first time in my career, I felt like I'd got a team where we were all equal, even though I was the boss, I had some great staff who all came in with different skills, and it was that skill mix that made it great and brought in the new psychology. One of my staff members learned in 2 years what took me 20. And it was great to see. And it was interesting just how, you know, how we've evolved as humans in some ways. Sometimes it looks like we haven't, in other ways we have. And on the other projects, I didn't have that support and I didn't have that team, and I was constantly pushing for things to get done. And it was really, really stressful. And I think it was last Christmas, I was working over the last Christmas, and I got to this point and I said, I can't do it. I've got to walk away from that. And because I've been in that space before where I keep trying and trying and trying, and I just can't make it happen. Because sometimes, especially in workplaces, you need a team to make things happen. It's very, there are, you know, I've been an independent worker for a long time as well. And there are things that you can do by yourself, but there are a lot of things where the work is halved and the concerns are shared. And especially with some of the work that we've done where there's safeguarding involved as well. Because one of my projects was aimed at women who've experienced domestic abuse. So, you know, we were working with people who were in crises. So I think for the first time in my life, I put my foot down and said no. Whereas in the past, I would have kept going, trying to make it work. But I knew, you know, I was on a rocky road. I was on a slope towards descending down a very deep crevice, and it was going to affect my health again. So I'll talk about that another time, but it's one of the reasons that I'm passionate about sharing some of what I've learned and experienced, because I really don't want people to go through it. A lot of stress is unnecessary. A lot of pain is unnecessary. And people come into their adult lives and mostly are doing the best that they can. And sometimes, like I said, it's a tweak. It's a tweak here or there. You don't have to go for the big goals. Just tweak some things. You know, if it's 2 hours that you normally do and it's too much, do an hour. If you do shopping on a Friday night, get up on a Monday morning at 6 a.m. if you can, and go. You know, it could just be small tweaks that you do that make a big difference, and then just monitor how that's gone. So I'm going to sign off in a second, and I wish you all well. And I don't know, I have no idea whether or not the listeners are in the UK or in the States, or actually anywhere else in the world. But thank you for listening. And I hope that you've got at least a couple of nuggets that you can take away with you. Thank you. Bye-bye.